Have you ever stopped to contemplate the life lessons that come out of some of our favorite childhood cartoons and stories? Obviously, Eric and I have, because in the past we've talked about lessons learned from Winnie the Pooh and all kinds of different things. And today, we're going to spend some time sharing some of the lessons that we think can be derived from one of our favorite cartoons, Scooby-Doo. So if you're a Scooby-Doo fan, or even if you're not, if you want to learn some lessons from a crazy talking dog and his gang, lace up your sneakers and let's get going.
Ray Royce?
Yes, Eric?
We're going to do a podcast.
Is that your Scooby-Doo impression?
Yes.
Are you going to talk in a Scooby-Doo voice for the entire podcast?
Rotally. Rotary run.
I think maybe not.
No.
No.
Just like I'll intersperse little shaggy bits here and there maybe.
I think probably that's about all we can handle.
So the reason I'm talking like Scooby-Doo is because...
Where are you?
Today we are unmasking life lessons from Scooby-Doo.
I loved Scooby-Doo as a kid.
Oh, so did I. Did anybody not like Scooby-Doo?
I don't know. If there's anybody out there who did not like Scooby-Doo or who does not like Scooby-Doo, probably just fast forward to next week. Because you kind of have to appreciate Scooby and the gang to appreciate today's conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. And even, I guess when our son was little, so it's probably 18, 19 years ago when they rebooted Scooby-Doo with the live action movies, like I didn't even mind watching those with my, you know, 5-year-old.
Totally, because Scooby and Shaggy.
And sandwiches. And Fred and Velma and Daphne and the Mystery Machine. And Old Man Smithers.
Old Man
it was
Smithers.
Always Old Man Smithers.
And those meddling kids.
I would have gotten away with it too if it wasn't for you meddling kids.
Oh, it's going to be voices all podcast.
I don't know. Do I have anybody else's? Oh, I could probably do Shaggy. Gee, Scoob, like, totally awesome. No, that's probably...
No, that wasn't bad.
Not bad?
Not bad.
Okay.
So you think there are life lessons to be learned from Scooby-Doo and the gang?
Absolutely. I think life lesson number one is there's no such thing as ghosts.
Fair. So just taking that one step further, mysteries can be unraveled and figured out. Everything is figure outable if you just stick to it.
And use the life lessons from the team at Scooby-Doo.
For sure. But just starting with the every mystery can be unraveled.
Every mystery can be unraveled.
You just have to what? How do you unravel the mysteries?
Well, are you familiar with the concept of Occam's razor? Are you familiar with that?
Sure. But go ahead for anybody who's not.
Yeah. So it's the concept that generally... the most obvious and likely solution is usually the solution. So you would think that the team would sort of get to the point where it's Old Man Smithers, but I guess that would ruin the episodes. But usually mysteries can be solved, and you start by looking at the most obvious and then wind backwards from there.
Though I'm thinking back to my childhood, and I don't feel like I always knew who the bad guy was.
In Scooby-Doo?
Yeah, at the start.
Well, later on, I think there was like a reboot in like the 80s or 90s or something. And they had this character, Red Herring. Do you remember Red Herring?
Vaguely.
That was this kid who they would often like think was the villain, but wasn't. And his name was Red Herring, which...
Subtle.
Subtle. Well, it's subtle when you're 50-something or 60. It's probably, it's actually not subtle when you're 50 or 60. It's probably subtle when you're 9.
So how do you reconcile red herring with the most obvious answer? Because red herring presented the more obvious answer.
Well, Occam's razor is not an absolute. So, in fiction and storytelling, you need to go beyond the most obvious.
But we're not talking about fiction and storytelling. We're talking about lessons we can take from Scooby-Doo. So I feel like that's two conflicting things. So what's the lesson there? Look for the obvious or beware of the red herring. How do you actually kind of use those lessons as lessons?
Well, I think part of the lesson is you have to keep digging if grit and persistence, because the team didn't just stop at red herring or whatever the red herring was or the false trail. They had grit, they had persistence, and they kept going until they solved the mystery. So I think lesson number one could be grit and persistence.
So, lesson number one is not that the obvious answer is necessarily the answer.
Correct.
And beware of the red herrings.
Beware of the red herring, beware of false answers, and have the grit and perseverance to find the correct answer to the mystery.
So, the next lesson, I think, kind of along that same path, is what drove them forward, I think, was a fair bit of curiosity. Because more often than not, when the gang chased down a mystery, they didn't have to.
Yeah, they could have driven away in the mystery machine.
Hopped in the mystery machine and gone to the beach surfing.
But it was what they actually loved to do, and what their jam was solving these mysteries and using critical thinking and pursuing the answer.
But by following their curiosity.
Yes, they wanted to know. They had to know. It was like within them, their curiosity drove them to it. So, yeah, they followed their curiosity.
So what's the lesson?
The lesson is follow your curiosity, follow what inspires you, follow what makes you question, follow what you want to know more about.
Yeah. Follow what you want to know more about. I think that's, you combine that with grit. If you combine curiosity and grit, I feel like that's how you solve mysteries, whether they're Scooby mysteries or our own kind of life mysteries. Right? Isn't that the secret, aren't those the secret ingredients? I feel like.
Yeah, and we were just talking about our life this morning. And I think if we add in what are we curious about and what can we bring some grit and persistence to, I think part of the conversation was we want a life with a little less grit, maybe, than what we've been gritting out for the last 30 years. But still following our curiosity, I think, is key to the next.
I think you're conflating two things.
I'm
All
conflating
right.
two things.
For me, you are, because
Okay.
I'm talking about following your curiosity with grit.
Following your curiosity
That's what I'm
with
saying.
grit.
Correct. So I'm not talking about all the grit you need to do other things. I'm just talking about that specific thing. Following your curiosity with grit. I think that in and of itself is a path. Does that make sense? Maybe you're not getting what I'm
Yeah, no,
saying.
I get it. I get it now. I get it now. So yeah, follow your curiosity with the grit to keep following and pulling those threads wherever they may lead.
That's what I'm thinking. That's what I think the lesson is, or at least one of the lessons.
Yeah, I think that's one of the big lessons for sure.
Okay, I've got another lesson.
Okay.
This is a big, important Scooby-Doo lesson that I think is a major theme throughout Scooby-Doo.
Okay.
Working on an empty stomach when you're hungry is not efficient.
hangry doesn't work.
Not just hangry. I mean, just you have to fuel your body in order to follow your curiosity, in order to keep pulling on the threads. You need to fuel yourself. And Scooby does it with sandwiches. Shaggy does it with sandwiches. But I think we all feed ourselves in different ways.
I think that is a good lesson, and I think that we can even go a little metaphorically with that in feeding our curiosity, just looping back to where we were, but feeding ourselves in terms of mental stimulation and then physically feeding ourselves, how we put nutrients in our body.
Exactly. Feeding ourselves, feeding our minds, our spirits, and absolutely feeding our bodies.
But I don't think giant sandwiches with like mayo and all that stuff is necessarily what we want to eat all the time.
Processed meats, no.
Scooby snacks, processed food, a little overprocessed, maybe some fruits and vegetables.
With all due respect, you eat, I shouldn't say you, I should say we. You eat more than I do, but we eat a lot of our version of Scooby snacks. Do you know what our version of Scooby snacks are?
Protein bars?
Totally.
Yeah, it's our biggest food vice, I would say.
Yeah, I think from now on we call protein bars Scooby
Scooby snacks. Okay. Sounds good. We'll do that.
So this means at least once or twice a day, Eric is going to amble into my office and go, "Hey, you got any Scooby snacks?"
No, I'm gonna go rotten Ruby rice. All right,
Okay,
I got another one.
go.
I think one of the life lessons from Scooby-Doo is the power of community
Absolutely, and friendship.
and friendship. And the five of them, like I remember some episodes or an episode, or maybe it was a movie where like Scooby and Shaggy break up. Does that ring a bell?
Vaguely, and
I
things
think
go badly
it might
wrong.
have been one of the movies. Yeah, and things go badly wrong for both of them. And even there, and there's even episodes or one of the movies where the whole gang breaks up and they all have a fight and they're all miserable and worse off. And of course they get together at the end. And the lesson is the power of friendships, the power of even just a handful, one or Scooby and Shaggy, they're just one on one. Having that person you can depend on.
For sure. And as we talk about that, I've been talking a lot about friendship and connections and friendship circles in the workshop I've been doing. And one of the things that we explored is the power of shared experiences. So one of the things that totally drives the gang together and connects them is just all of these shared adventures and experiences. So it's not even just have a friend. It's like do stuff with your friends. Have adventures, take on challenges together.
Yeah, the
This is our secret.
what's
This is why our relationship is so fantastic.
why?
Because we take on massive, crazy, stupid challenges nonstop since pretty much the day we met.
And shared suffering. That's how people bond in the army in basic training. There's the shared suffering. That's how
Just,
people.
I'm just going to interrupt you. So that's how people shared suffering. That's how people bond in the army and in basic training and in our
And
marriage.
in our marriage, yes. And in like a CrossFit class where you're really struggling and working really hard, or on even just a long, arduous hike. Or maybe even if you get lost a little bit on a walk or hike or whatever, but having that shared experience, often a more negative, what we would think of as a negative shared experience, will actually bring you closer than a more positive one. It's kind of like the bridge experiment, where they take college students and they introduce young man and young woman, and they introduce them like in a lab, and they say, rate the attractiveness of this person. Then they take the two people or different people and they put them in the middle of a high, scary suspension bridge. And then they say, rate that person. And they find that through that experience that they rate them more attractive because their heart rates are accelerated, all the things that you sort of associate with, you know, falling in love. So when you have sort of that experience, maybe a little adventure, being chased by a ghost, it brings you closer together.
But you know what that study doesn't address? Is if you rate that person more attractive because you're in a scary situation and your adrenaline is up and you confuse, the thesis of that study is that people confuse that feeling with attraction. What happens when they get off the bridge?
I wonder if it's just sort of imprinted in them, that that's sort of their impression and first impressions matter, or
that wears off.
Or that wears off. Well, it didn't wear off for the gang. Because for the most part, they stayed together through thick and thin. And as part of their friendship and community, they also accepted each other's faults and foibles. I think that's part of it. A little bit lesson there is when it comes to friends, accept the good with the bad sometimes.
Absolutely. So members of the gang definitely screwed some things up from time to time, especially Shaggy and Scooby.
They always screwed something up.
And that acceptance of your friends. So not expecting our friends to be perfect, our gang to be perfect.
And along those lines, I think there's a lesson there that these imperfections in others, sort of the uniqueness that everybody brings, can make your life more enriching. Everybody has value and you know, brings something to the table that we can learn from or share that experience with, even if they're different. So a little, even diversity, though they weren't particularly diverse in the show, but a message about differentness.
Except that one was a dog, so he was a little bit different.
He was non-human diversity.
That leads me to the next lesson.
Okay.
Having a talking dog would be really, really cool.
Moose talks. He just does it through my vocal cords.
Oh, he was talking last night in the middle of the night.
Yeah, he was saying, let me out because I have to go poopies.
But that was weird. Usually he'll go to the door and do a little bark, and he didn't do that. He was talking last night. And in my dream, because he didn't wake me up. I didn't wake up from that episode. There were three of Moose getting up in the middle of the night episodes last night. And I didn't really wake up from that one until you got up. And then I was like, what is he talking about? I meant the dog, like in my dream. It was very strange.
Have you seen any of the like TikToks of the talking? I think it's a French bulldog. The woman has a French bulldog that she pushes around in a baby stroller. And the bulldog just goes, the little bulldog goes, wah, 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 and she has him on a subway. And like people just are looking at this dog, and the dog literally just talks. He's not barking.
Oh, so
not
this isn't
whining.
So this isn't like voiceover. This is actually the noise that the dog makes.
The noise that the dog makes is gibberish, but it sounds like he's trying to talk. The looks on people's faces, it's hysterical if any of you are on the TikTok. Look it up. It might be on Instagram too, but it's hysterical. So lesson number, what is this?
Five, four. Talking dogs are awesome.
Talking dogs are awesome. Okay. Lesson number six. I think one of the other lessons is about courage and about facing your fears. What do you think of that?
Not only that, or yes, and so often, and pretty much always in Scooby-Doo, once they pull back the curtain on their fears, they discover it's not so scary.
Oh, a little more unfounded, right? A lot of times these fears, once you face them, are unfounded. Interesting. Because I think it's pretty much, is it always Shaggy and Scooby who have to face their fears, right? Fred and Velma are pretty much always ready to set the trap. I mean, they're afraid and they're running in one door and coming out the other, and this music is playing and everybody's
And
scared.
everybody's being chased. I think everybody's frightened. I think all of the characters, all of the gang members are frightened. It's Scooby and Shaggy who get to do all the screaming.
Right. And then when they set the trap, usually Scooby and Shaggy are like the bait, or they have to go, I don't know, hook the winch to the ghost pirate ship or whatever it is. And they're all afraid. But they do face their fears. And that sort of loops back to the friendship.
Oh, it's so funny you say that because I was going to say that loops back to the grit and the curiosity.
Oh,
Their
interesting.
curiosity, you ready? Their curiosity is stronger than their fear.
I would push back on that.
Really?
I would say Velma's curiosity is stronger than her fear, and maybe Fred and Daphne's, but I would say Scooby and Shaggy don't do it for their own personal curiosity. They're doing it for their friends and as part of the team.
Okay, so being part of a team gives you strength and bravery.
Well, definitely the community aspect and part of the team and all that definitely gives you strength and courage to go beyond and face your fears. That can definitely help.
Which makes a ton of sense if we think back to our wiring, because if you go back to ancient human wiring, it would make a ton of sense that we would have more courage, feel braver when we were with our tribe than we were on, than when we're on our own.
Yeah, 100%. And I think in those cases, well, you were, and I guess you are. I mean, when even metaphorically these days, most of the time when we're facing our fear, it's not a mortal peril. It's the fear of embarrassment or whatever. And having our team and support system does give us more capacity to face those fears.
Absolutely. Okay, ready?
Yes.
A reliable vehicle is good.
The mystery machine.
Didn't you want a mystery machine?
Oh, totally. They had like a mystery machine Hot Wheel that was like the most coveted Hot Wheel ever.
And covering your vehicle in flowers and kind of making it your own makes it even more fun. And I suppose I would pull a lesson in that, which is it's okay to stand out a little bit.
Oh, let your freak flag fly.
Not sure I would go that far. I
Not
don't even
quite
know
that
exactly
far.
what that expression means.
I think in my head, it means like be uniquely yourself and don't have any embarrassment around it. There might be some deeper meaning on the internet that I'm not aware of that I'm getting in total trouble, but I think that's my interpretation is it's okay to be uniquely yourself, and it's okay to have a van with the mystery machine on the side of it.
So it, not just be uniquely you, but it's okay to broadcast that, maybe.
Well, that goes to okay, letting your flag fly, letting your banner fly for whatever reason, which is putting it out there. Putting it out there, whatever flag you want to hang on your porch, you go right ahead. And I think that's be authentically you. Is that the lesson? Look at Fred with his ass, his like scarf ascot. Didn't he have like an ascot?
Oh, I was getting to clothing, but when I was talking about the mystery machine and being willing to be, as you say, authentically yourself, but also being willing to let people see that. don't hide your authentic or authentic self,
right?
Whatever that means. But yeah, I was going to go to clothing. That was actually my next thing.
Yeah. So go ahead.
Okay.
Hit
you ready?
Me, hit me.
All right. This is a major lesson that I love a lot.
Okay.
It is okay to have one go-to outfit that you wear over and over and over again.
Well, that's good because I do. So certainly the gang does. Scooby just has his collar.
Yes. I don't think the lesson is walk around just in a collar unless you happen to be a talking dog. But the characters have their go-to outfits. Now, okay. All right. I accept that they're cartoon characters. But this is not a lesson that's strictly cartoon characters. You look at some of the great leaders, you know, Steve Jobs, for example, pretty much always wore the same thing. And when asked about it, he said it was because he didn't want to have to think about it. And women in particular, and I don't know if guys are the same, but we do spend and burn some mental energy on what we're going to wear today. I mean, I don't anymore, really, but
I don't really at all.
I said it's more women than guys for sure, but finding the one, and I, you know, we're being sort of super tongue in cheek about this, but I actually mean this as a lesson, which is finding the look and the clothing that make you feel authentically you, that you feel good in, that you can run through a haunted house in, and then just kind of replicating that and not giving it a whole amount of thought. I think that's a great lesson to be learned from Scooby and the gang.
Yeah.
Mostly from the gang, because Scooby didn't dress.
No, Scooby didn't. Well, sometimes he did. Sometimes he dressed as a grandma. those are funny ones. But yeah, and even last night I went out and met a couple of the guys for a happy hour and got out of my usual sweats and joggers and sneakers and did not have to think at all about what I was going to wear, because all I did was throw on a pair of jeans and my favorite Blundstone boots and out the door I went. It's easy being a guy. I'm sorry, ladies. It's just a lot easier.
Hair and makeup, that's all I'm saying.
I don't have any hair and I don't have any makeup.
All right. Anything we have forgotten?
I think that really sort of sums it up. I think having some critical thinking skills and some skepticism around, like, red herring, just sort of looping back to that idea,
following your curiosity. Having some, what'd you say, skepticism?
And critical thinking skills?
I would like to close the loop this way.
Okay.
Having skepticism and critical thinking skills, especially around the things that scare you. Maybe that's the ultimate lesson of Scooby-Doo. What do you think of that?
I think that is an awesome lesson. And I think that, you know, we can apply it. What scares us? What, you know, change, making the change, doing things like changing our diet, changing our habits and going on walks. You know, what else scares you? So, you know, I don't know how scared people are.
Taking a walk.
People are scared of change. Change can be scary.
For sure. Change can be scary, but there are a million things out there that scare people.
That is true. There are a million things that are out there. So have some curiosity, have some skepticism, have some critical thinking, and go attack some of those things that scare you.
What do you mean attack?
Explore. Engage. Do.
I don't know where this is going.
All right. Over to you, Joyce. Let's wrap it up.
Have a nice walk, everyone. I used to think that when I went out into nature and left my phone and earbuds behind and walked in silence, letting my mind go wherever it wanted, that I was doing a walking meditation. And then I met Yael Shai, and she taught me that there's so much more to a walking meditation. It was so incredible and insightful and expanded my world in such a way that I went to Yael and I said, will you work with us to create a program, 30 days, 30 walks, that could help introduce other people to the power of a walking meditation? Can we dismantle the idea that in order to meditate, you have to sit in a dimly lit room on a cushion? Can we create a meditation program for people who love to move? And so we did. Meet the Joyful Wanderer 30-day walking meditation app, which is available in the Apple Store and the Google Play Store right now.